Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, a lot of news from the Destination D event last weekend in Florida, changes coming to downtown Disney.
The new dining location has opened near Harbor Galley. We finish our talk with author and former cast member Bruce and more. DL Weekly starts now.
This is your captain speaking to you from the wheelhouse. I'd like to welcome all of you aboard the DL Weekly podcast. For safe passage on our trip, please do not sit or climb on the outside railings. And be sure to watch your children. The water can be unpredictable in these parts, and we'd sure hate to lose any of you.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of November 24th, 2021. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. It's official weekly tiers like Jennifer N. and Brandon H. who ensure that DL Weekly can happen every week. We have an amazing community of Disneyland fans that are ready to meet you, hear your experiences, share your knowledge, and share all they have to offer with you.
Well, the holidays are quickly approaching, and we'll be sending out postcards again this year to all of our supporters. We have to get on that, by the way.
Yeah.
At every level. If you are currently a supporter on Patreon, please log in to make sure that your address is up to date so you can get your card. If you would like to get a postcard from us, please head on over to dlweekly.net/support to become an official weekly tier and get on the list.
Now let's get to the news.
Olaf has worked his magic because something is coming to Disneyland that was never expected to. Magic Bands. Not just any Magic Bands, but the new Magic Band Plus. The new Magic Band Plus will offer glow-with-the-show type color-changing lights, haptic vibrations, and gesture recognition. The new version will allow guests to interact with things in the park, making it a more immersive experience. The previous features of the Magic Bands, like theme park tickets, room keys, and purchases, will also still be available. Magic Band Plus is expected to debut in Disneyland in 2022 after Walt Disney World.
So exciting. I've seen mixed reviews online with people being excited or maybe not excited about this. I, for one, am excited about Magic Bands. I feel like this has been a long time coming. And actually, we were talking about this during our DL Weekly Friendsgiving, where we were hanging out with some weekly tiers via Zoom this past weekend. And we were talking about how, you know, with Disneyland being more of a locals park and how people make repeat, you know, it's more frequent that there's repeat visits to Disneyland maybe than there is Walt Disney World. It's surprising that Magic Band didn't actually start in Disneyland versus starting in Walt Disney World, where you have a lot of people that visit just once. Anyway, so that was kind of, I never thought of that, but I'm very excited. For those of you that maybe don't know what Magic Bands are, or you've never used a Magic Band because
they're
you've
amazing.
Not gone to Walt Disney World, yes, what they do, the best way I can describe them is instead of having to rely on your phone for things like park tickets, even payment.
In the past, Fast passes.
But like payment information, it will be linked to like Genie Plus and Lightning Lane reservation type things. If you had a hotel, like a Disney hotel, your room key is linked to it. It's all that information is stored in the Magic Band. And so you can just go scan in at the gates, scan into your hotel room. You can scan at the registers. It takes out the need of needing the phone. Disneyland had been pushing, heavy on the app.
Yep.
Which you and I kind of got to a point, especially now that with Genie, it's like, I don't want to be on my phone that often. So it's nice to have this option to be able to put the phone away when you don't want the phone out. Plus, as we all know, Disneyland's Wi-Fi is really not the greatest. So sometimes having to pull up the app was a little more challenging than it needed to be. So Magic Bands are going to be a big convenience and just kind of make things a little bit easier when you're at the resort. Now, if you don't want a Magic Band on your wrist, that's fine. Have no fear. You can still do everything you're doing today on the app when Magic Bands roll out. So that's you're not going to be forced into a Magic Band if you don't want a Magic Band. Just an option.
I missed this part of the news, but the Disney World app right now has a section of it that you can go into and you can actually install or use part of it to actually use on like an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
So instead of having a Magic Band, you could use your Apple Watch, because I have an Apple Watch. So I'm thinking that that might be something cool. Although these new ones with these color changing and stuff look like they're going to be pretty cool. Hopefully they end up having like what your band that you got was like, where you can recharge them easier.
Yep.
Because with the Magic Bands now, I think that like once the battery was dead, it was that was it. So I assume with the things where you've got like the color changing, you're going to have to find some way to recharge it or a battery or something. Hopefully it's rechargeable, because if you have to continue to replace, even if it's like a watch battery, that can get kind of expensive over time. So I hope it's rechargeable. I love the idea. You'll still have to use your phone to make your Genie Plus or Genie reservations, Lightning Ring reservations. But the nice thing is you won't have to whip your phone out every time you need to scan at the queue.
Yeah.
You can just beep your thing and be done with it. And payment. So I like all of that. So if anybody has used either Android Pay or Apple Pay on their smartphones or on their smartwatches, that's kind of how a Magic Band works, is you kind of just, it uses that same technology. It determines that you're close enough to the thing and it scans. Although I'm curious to see, because we don't have any infrastructure for this. All of the payment processing things I noticed when we were there last do have, you know, I could pay with my watch or with my phone. Yeah. That's the same technology, so Magic Bands will work there. It's just the attraction entrance things where you have the scanners, because right now it's that little thing you put the barcode or whatever under it.
I wonder, maybe somehow with either that or they can just swap those things out. I don't know.
I hope so.
They didn't say when. In 2022, so we don't know if it's beginning, middle, or end of the year. But yeah, it's still very exciting, because when they started talking about Magic Bands, I was like, oh, here we go. This has nothing to do with Disneyland, all about Disney World, you know.
Yeah, because you watched it live.
Yeah, I watched it live. And then as soon as Josh DeMaro said something like, and the one question we've been getting asked since we rolled these out was, when is it coming to Disneyland? I'm like, yeah, right, never. He's like, it's coming 2022. And I blacked out. I was like, what? Yeah, so exciting. But
Teresa even messaged me and I was like, what is going on?
I know. I put it in our Discord chat. I threw it up on our social media pages, and then Tag hadn't said anything. And I'm like, he needs to know. So I tagged Discord.
I think it's cool. I've been waiting for Magic Bands. Like you said, when we were on the Friendsgiving thing too, is Disneyland has more local visitors. One of the things people like doing with Magic Bands is buying the different versions of Magic Bands, because there are all these cool different designs. It's almost like pin trading, in that you could collect all these different variations of things, and they're useful.
Or ears.
Yeah, they're very useful. So I never understood why they spent, it's been all over the internet, how much Disney spent doing the Magic Bands and FastPass Plus out in Florida. Why would they not try to recoup some of that by also throwing it at Disneyland? Yeah. And there's been stories all over the place, and then they talked about the thing. I'll tell you, anything that gets us away from our phones more in the park, I'm a fan of. I also was kind of wondering what happened to Glow with the Show stuff, because they sold ears for a while, and they sold wands. They showed in their little preview video, somebody was watching Harmonious, and it was reacting to the Harmonious show. So I like stuff like that. I don't know. I think it'll be cool to look down and see my Magic Band doing something, but it's not going to be something that I'm like, you know, I want to watch the show. I'm not going to be staring at my Magic Band, but it's kind of cool.
The other thing that they announced for Walt Disney World, it'll be coming, I believe it's coming in some form also to Disneyland, but one of the things with Magic Band Plus for Disney World is all of the different 50th statues that they have. Somehow you'll be able to interact with those statues through your Magic Band.
Do you remember, you played, a couple different places of that game in Disney World where you'd go and get the cards?
We wanted to, but remember it was kind of
closed. You saw it.
Yep, I've seen it.
So I'm hoping that the Magic Bands will do something like that, and that would be awesome.
So the other thing, too, that I want to kind of dispel, that I saw a lot of people not quite understanding on, you know, some people weren't understanding online, is that you're going to have to buy a new Magic Band every trip. That's not the case. If they do swap them out, or like there is, you know, some sort of, like right now we have Magic Band versus Magic Band Plus. We don't know for sure if the original Magic Bands will work on the Magic Band Plus system, but either way, you don't actually have to continuously buy new ones if you don't want to.
And the cool thing is you can accessorize like you do with like watch bands, where you could have 10 Magic Bands linked to your account and you just go and...
Well, and I think some of them... So the Magic Band itself is like this little tiny disc, or like this little puck. I think some of them you could actually swap that out if you wanted. So say I bought, like right now, the one that I had from Walt Disney World was all purple. Say I wanted a different style of bracelet that it was in. I think you can take that puck out and put it into the empty bracelet. I've also seen where if you're not a bracelet person, they make it so they have little like things you can attach to like a keychain, or you can attach it to like a retractable belt clip thing. So there's lots of options.
Do you know what else this gets rid of? We don't have to worry about magic key cards.
That's
you can
true.
Just load it on your magic band. And
that's
then hopefully,
true.
Because of the bands, they'll probably have terminals that sit-down restaurants will bring
Very
to you.
True.
So
That'll
hopefully,
help that.
With discounts, it'll all just, when you scan it, it'll just take that all into account.
That would be great. The canceling of the new hotel on the west side of downtown Disney a few years ago left everyone wondering what was going to happen to the space that is now empty, like the old AMC theater location. At the Destination D event this weekend, we got a glimpse into what is planned. The old AMC theater building will be demolished, and a new green space with rooms for guests to lounge and relax will be in its place. The area will also have a stage for performances. This also means that the current Starbucks, Earl of Sandwich, and Sugar Boo & Co. will again be forced to close doors for a second time. The concept art does show a building to the east of the area that may offer a place for these establishments to relocate in the future, but no announcements have been made.
So I thought this was interesting.
It's so bittersweet.
Yeah. I thought this was interesting because we got the announcement we talked about, I think, last week about Toontown, and they're adding some green spaces for people to be, which something we didn't talk about, but I think is important, is between this project and the Toontown project, the guess from everybody is it won't be real grass because that won't stand up to that many people. Yeah. So we'll have some type of artificial turf that'll look probably pretty grass-like. But I was surprised that they're bringing like green space because it seems to me like a lot of times, you know, you're getting rid of a place where money can be made, right? And doing it to something that it objectively is not going to make direct financial sense, I guess. But I will say, with putting those like little strip of buildings on the side, you're going to be fine. Right now, the AMC theater is empty, and like the theater section itself is empty. There's nothing there. It was a nice area for us to have some meetups, and there was plenty of seating. But I think having a nice meetup like on the grass would be nice. They're going to have a stage there. I'm very excited to see like how this turns out. Plus, this is the first thing we'll see as where they're trying to go with the Disneyland Forward project, because supposedly all this will tie into that.
Well, and see, that was the thing I was thinking about, too, with green space. You know what green space is? It's temporary, really. You know, there's no reason that the green space is going to be... It could be there for the next 20 years, or it could only be there for the next 5 years. Really, the big thing is getting down... like the old AMC theater and like opening that space up. It could be that the green space is just temporary until the Disneyland Forward project moves forward. That could be a possibility. But the thing that I think is cool is they do have a stage in Downtown Disney now, true. But it's very small.
And it's there's nowhere to sit to watch anything.
And it's kind of in the middle of the walkway. So it's very awkward for people to stop and enjoy the entertainment there. So I think it'll be nice to have a larger dedicated area that's not in the middle of the walkway for these performances to happen. And so people can go, you know, just sit, relax, and enjoy. What did you think of the concept art, though? Does it give you kind of like retro Tomorrowland-y vibes off of the design?
Yeah, you're going to laugh at me. But the first thing I noticed was it looked like the current monorails, but painted like they were in the 80s and 90s. And this one is actually, unless I'm like, I don't know, it's hard to tell for sure the color, but it looked purple to me. And I was so excited that this concept art brought back monorail purple, because I loved monorail purple. But anyway, the rest of the concept art, it looks good. It's in that kind of style of that kind of futuristic 60s, you know, retro modern, you know, Tomorrowland of the 60s kind of look. I did see somebody say online that this would, in fact, David at Freshbaked was one who said this, that this concept art, if you think about it, this could be the first part of what's going to tie into a Tomorrowland redo, because you get on the monorail here and you get off in Tomorrowland. So it'd be a consistent theme at both ends of the monorail. So that makes me excited because like Tomorrowland needs it, right?
It does.
I'm excited to see this. I think it'll be neat. I love more open space for things. This is probably one of the few Disney spaces I've ever seen that people are like walking on grass because usually those things have fences around them. So we'll have to see. I like it. I like that kind of outdoor mallsy look. I'm also, like I said, interested to see what ends up happening with the Disneyland Forward stuff in the future.
So yeah, the one thing that I am disappointed about, and I'm hoping that it's just temporary, is the fact, especially Earl of Sandwich. I think Earl of Sandwich is such a wonderful
yes
addition and, you know, part of Downtown Disney.
It's expensive, it tastes good.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. It's a really, really great option. They've got great breakfast food, lunch and dinner, obviously, too. And the other nice thing is if you wanted a break from the resort, it was just a quick monorail ride away.
Yep.
If you were in Disneyland. But yeah, so I think I really hope that they do come back and that them being closed is just temporary so that they can rework these buildings. So fingers crossed for the return of Earl of Sandwich. I also do think they will have to bring, I do think they'll need to bring back that Starbucks because, man, the Starbucks, as we know, in the parks are like...
And the other one in Downtown Disney is also very
crazy busy. And then, yes, the other Downtown Disney one is also way crazy busy. So I'm sure a lot of people, you know, coming in from that side made it a point to stop at that Starbucks because it was not the world's craziest wait. The other nice thing is that Starbucks, both Downtown Disney Starbucks locations did offer like their version of mobile order. So you could order ahead and just grab and go. You cannot do that in the park. So that also was another convenience too. So hopefully those will come back.
The other thing I want to say is this is the other side of this section of Downtown Disney, but let's talk about the side that we're kind of like up on. The ESPN building, something needs to happen there. And the Rainforest Cafe building, I think that they still have a huge opportunity that they can make a Star Wars restaurant. And it would be
so, too.
So popular. The fact that it would be a Disney experience, like a dining experience, a Disney dining experience, not in the park, but highly themed, people would, they could, like, especially if they have reservation stuff in the park, like, and things are full. This would be so popular.
For sure.
I think producer James, what do you think about putting a restaurant in, above the trading post in Downtown Disney?
I mean, I think it's a great idea. You got the space, you may as well take advantage of it.
Well, and it used to be a restaurant, so it can't be that hard of a transition.
Right. Yeah, so you could play with plenty of properties. Like, I know you're talking about Star Wars, and like, I'm never going to say no, but at some point, maybe there is too much of a good thing, and we should let other things kind of shine, too. There's plenty of opportunity out there, so I'm with you.
Maybe it could be a Jungle Cruise themed.
Get out of my head. I was just about to say, what about,
you
like, the Jungle Cruise?
You must be thinking loud tonight. Everybody's in your head.
You could do, like, an Indiana Jones.
You could do Indiana Jones.
Theme, too.
Think of all the cool themed food you could have. You could have, like, a little boulder. You could have a boulder that would bring...
spaghetti and meatballs?
No. That would bring your food to you. Like, come down and stop at your...
Like how they sometimes have trains that bring you your food.
Or like the sushi places that have the boats that just keep going around. You could do a Jungle Cruise themed restaurant where your food comes around on a Jungle Cruise boat.
There you go. Oh, Disney, you should hire us. We've got ideas.
I don't know if they're good ideas, but they're ideas. Well, it's been a while since we heard anything about the new Disney Vacation Club Tower coming to the Disneyland Hotel in the future. Work has been progressing on the site recently, and Disney showed off some more concept art from the project, including what the rooms will look like. The new room design will take inspiration from the sketching style of Walt Disney himself. The new tower will feature 350 guest rooms and should open up sometime in 2023.
I loved this when they showed what. So first they showed what the outside of the room was, or what the outside of the new tower was going to look like during the Destination D23 event. And I was like, yeah, we know. Give me more. And then they showed some of the pool stuff. And I was like, yeah, we kind of talked. We've seen that already. We've seen it. And then they sounded like they were good. That was all the segment was going to be. And then they kind of teased, we should give them something else. So then they showed the concept art for the rooms. Let me tell you. Gorgeous. I think they're beautiful. One kind of side note on this that I thought was interesting is some people were pointing out, and this makes me a little nervous, but some people online had been pointing out, why is the new DVC tower focused more on like animation, whereas the Disneyland towers are focused on like Disneyland? So some people are speculating and are thinking that maybe they're going to re-theme the other towers to animation. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I hope that's not the case. But what I do know is what they're proposing for what these new rooms are going to look like. Beautiful. I was joking. I'm like, I'd become a DVC member just so I could have this be my home resort and like always stay in these gorgeous rooms because the colors are great. The style, like the artwork that they have on the wood. Beautiful.
I feel like, and I know some people are going to pitchforks and everything at me when I say this. A few years ago, they talked about demolishing one tower at a time at the Disneyland Hotel and rebuilding it. And I feel like with this looking so nice, that I feel like they should kind of just transition it. However, the other argument with that is a lot of people with the latest Disney World hotels, things they've built, this looks like from the outside, like any other hotel anywhere else. Yeah. It doesn't look very Disney from the outside.
I agree with that.
It's not very whimsical. You know, like the Grand Californian, it looks all arts and crafts style. You know, out in Florida, you've got things like the Contemporary and the Polynesian, and even the All-Star Music and Movies resorts and everything, they've got like big characters and stuff.
Yeah.
This just looks like something that would be next to the hotel.
Yeah, it could be the Hilton.
Or, sorry, it would be next to the airport.
Yeah. I will say
the rooms look good, though.
The inside's very, very Disney feeling, but yeah, you're right. The outside's kind of standard hotel feeling.
I do like the idea that they're going to have, and I had seen this somewhere else before, that they're going to be some type of like rooftop something so you could like see fireworks and stuff. That'd be really cool.
That would be cool. But the room that they showed, I don't know if all of them will be inspired by this same movie, but the room that they teased with the concept art was inspired by the animated classic Sleeping Beauty. So very beautiful. I joked, I need this person to come help me design like my house because it was cool. I like the carpeting's nice. It all ties in together.
And they said that there's even more design elements that they weren't going to show right now. So I'm interested to see what those things are.
Yeah. Well, the new dining area for Harbor Galley opened last week sooner than expected. Pelican's Landing is the name and theme of this new seating area along the Rivers of America between Harbor Galley across from the Haunted Mansion and the rafts to Tom Sawyer's Island. The area has a lot of nautical details and adds a lot of seating in this area of the park. Some informational signs are also on display, giving some information about the Mark Twain, Sailing Ship Columbia, and some of the local plants and nautical equipment.
So it's interesting. As we were looking at construction photos for this, I had a hard time with the scale. I couldn't tell how big or small this was going to be. And then I thought it was going to be small, and some places were saying it was going to be small, and some places said it was going to be big, and I just didn't know. And then I saw pictures the very first day, which it opened on Friday, which I think it was Friday, and I was very surprised that it had opened so quickly because the last pictures I had seen, they still hadn't put decking down or anything, but they turned this sucker around quick at the end anyway. And so I was like, okay. And then I saw more pictures we have linked in our show notes on Mice Chat where they took some more like wide angle photos and stuff so you could kind of see the area. They had quite a bit of seating and stuff right there. Very exciting. It looks great. I love that they added the details. One of the things Mice Chat was talking up was the fact that, you know, Disney hasn't done a lot of like edutainment stuff in recent years, but these display plaques are kind of edutainment because they've got some stuff that'll like teach you about something, but you're also kind of at Disneyland. I do like this. I think it's cool. I think it was a good spot. I don't feel like I'm going to miss any of that walkway or whatever it was before in that section. Good on them. I think they did a really nice job on it, and now I'm excited to see the other project that hasn't been done yet, which is the walkway into Toontown, because there's some weird stuff going there, too, that I'm not sure what's going on. So hopefully everything will be good. I'm also glad Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opened. We got rid of a lot of stuff. It is like they widened a lot of walkways and removed a bunch of things. It seems like we're getting some of that back, and it's better.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it.
I was really impressed with this. First of all, I must have missed some sort of memo because I thought this was just going to be like flat along the river. I didn't realize that there was going to be like a lower and upper elevated seating area. So that was very cool. Plus, the pelicans that they have up there nesting and just kind of hanging out on Pelican's Landing, I thought were a nice touch, right?
They're big.
It's a dining area. It's Disney, right? You don't have to do all those extra things, but because it's Disney, they pay attention and put in all of these extra fun details to make it more of a themed experience instead of it just being like, well, just go take your chowder over there. You're fine. So I think it's very, very cool. I'm excited to see it in person next time we're there.
I want to get something from Harbor Galley because I feel like I've wanted to, but for one reason or another, the last couple times we've been there, I haven't gotten anything.
No, it's been closed. It's been kind of closed.
Well, no, because I was supposed to get the thing with Liberty, and we never did.
You were going to get we were going to get chowder, but we ended up getting chowder at
French Market.
Yeah. We ended up getting chowder at French Market instead of going over to Harbor Galley because I wanted that's right. We skipped it last time.
It also reminded me that there is that back path that's behind Harbor Galley that I forgot about it. Because I was thinking when we were there and it was really busy, we should have gone over there to record the podcast because it would have been like a little out of the way. I don't think a lot of people realize it's there unless you not. like, you know, it's like, if you know, you know. Mm-hmm. But
next time we're there, we're going to have to check this all out.
Check that out. Well, the day has finally come. I called it. I knew it was coming soon. I'm glad it finally came.
We thought it was going to come shortly after the September trip, because remember they had all of the the queue all the way out to almost Hungary.
They're probably training for it.
Maybe. Yeah.
Star Wars Rise of the Resistance is testing standby only with no boarding groups required. This is testing our theory that the attraction is in so much demand because of the queue system. We'll see this week what the wait times are with just standby. The removal of the virtual queue is also a first step in heading towards Genie Plus and Lightning Lane coming to Disneyland in the future. I just looked and it's down right now. But the last time I looked, it was at 90 minutes.
So I, for whatever reason, decided to just kind of look throughout today to see what it was doing. The highest I saw it at was 120 minutes. The lowest I saw it at was 80 minutes, which, quite honestly, with it being such a popular attraction and, you know, one of the new, it's not super new at this point, but it is still one of the newer attractions in the resort. I'm happy that it wasn't any worse than that. When they first opened, though, that queue stretched, I think, all the way didn't it stretch all the way into Frontierland or something crazy like that?
Yep, it was out. Yeah, it was out
by Big Thunder.
Big Thunder.
Yeah. So the first,
I don't even know logistics of that.
Yeah, how that happened. Yeah, I was trying to figure out how.
I would have thought it would have out into Splash Mountain area, but no.
Anyways, but yeah, so the first day, which was interesting because it was a Monday, I think the longest wait was like 3 hours, but since then it's kind of leveled out. If you think about, which Tag had just pulled up, so currently right now it's a 95-minute wait for Radiator Springs Racers.
And just so you guys know, it is 6:13 on Tuesday, the 23rd of November, when we're looking at these times.
So when you think, when we were out in July, I'm trying to remember how long we ended up having to wait for Radiator Springs Racers.
It was like 90
minutes.
I want
to say it was like, it was like an hour and a half. So really, for Rise of the Resistance to be topping out at 120 minutes today, all things considered, that's not the worst. So hopefully it'll level out even more.
I also think that this is the first week, right? It just started yesterday.
Well, and it also started on a Monday. I'm curious to see what happens Friday, Saturday.
Sure. I'm excited to see what ends up happening after the holiday season, because I feel like things will get back to a normal thing. I didn't even look. What's Web Slingers right now? And I know Web Slingers is not as popular of an attraction, so
don't
write your angry emails. It's an 80-minute wait right now for Web Slingers.
Wow.
So that's good, though, Rebecca, because then that means that Indiana Jones will have a shorter line in the morning, and I'll be happy about that. But I'm just glad they finally got off of it, because I think it was another pain point for people who weren't in the know to be able to experience the attraction. And now it's like, you know what? If I want to wait 90 minutes or whatever, or 120 minutes to see that attraction, I can.
Yeah, and for some people, if you have never been and don't frequently, don't go frequently, and you've been looking forward to this attraction, that might be worth it to you. And so I'm glad people have that option now.
And with the standby, that means you could technically ride it multiple times in one day, you can't.
That's
so if James wanted to go experience it like four or five times in one day,
and
he could
his entire Disney day.
He could get in line, go through the whole thing.
That sounds like a great use of a Disney day.
He would just play the Play Disney Parks app in the thing and scan all the crates.
There you go,
I'm going to need like 4 battery packs.
With all the holiday fun going on inside the parks, Downtown Disney has joined in on the fun as well. The Disney Ultimate Toy Drive, which supports Toys for Tots, is available, in addition to lots of treats, drinks, food, and merchandise offerings. Of course, there is also entertainment. Holiday Harmony, the Moonrays, and the Sugar Plums a cappella carolers will perform in the evenings, Fridays through Sundays, November 26th through December 26th. Main stage bands will also perform near the Downtown Disney District main stage. Of course, the Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge will also entertain guests.
So there's a lot going on in Downtown Disney. I mean, they're about to get all this cool new stuff that we talked about earlier, down the road a little bit. They've got all the sweets and treats. Of course, I feel like they always have a lot of good stuff. I see some macarons here that look really good. Some churros.
Snowman macarons. How cute.
That is cute. Of course, there's holiday merchandise at the Disney Home Store, World of Disney, Disney. We've covered a lot of that stuff before. The carolers I've heard have also been really good. An interesting take on gift cards is coming to Disneyland and Walt Disney World soon. The Holiday Pin series features a gift card along with a character pin as an added bonus. The gift cards with pins must be activated at $100, with the limited edition pin included at no additional cost. There are four sets with Stitch, Mickey Mouse, Grogu, or Baby Yoda if you prefer, and Olaf.
I thought this was such a fun thing for the holidays. I don't know if I've paid attention and noticed that they've done these in years past, but this is not, I don't think this is something, you know, new this year. But I think it's so cool because the pin's no additional cost. That's a pretty good value, because what's a Disney pin? Anywhere from like $9 to $20 or something for just the rack pins. So to get these pins for free, they're themed very cute. It's the character that, you know, whichever character, so either Stitch, Mickey, Grogu, or Olaf. But then they're also hanging out with like their friends in a snowman version. So like Grogu's hanging out with the Mandalorian as a snowman. I think it's so cute. And I don't know, I just think it's very cool that they're offering these just as a bonus for a $100 gift card.
Why not? What a neat idea to offer a pin with a gift card. Because I know some people don't like giving gift cards because they feel like they're not giving like a gift. Now, $100 is a lot. So like, we'll put that out there. But the fact that you could get a pin with it, it's like, here's a pin and some extra Disney spending money or something like that.
Yes, I think they're so fun. Which, who doesn't need more money, more Disneyland-specific money?
Oh, yes. Everybody always needs it, especially if they keep coming out with good stuff, like all the food and stuff.
Well, one of my favorite details that was added outside of Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout has been having some issues recently. The space goo that is scattered around the area has started to shrink in some areas, causing the area to be uneven. Some of the goo has even come undone from the walkway, leaving little holes and divots. No word on if Disney is going to repair, replace, or just remove this detail. Another thing I saw, too, was some of the other space goo puddles were cracking.
Yep.
And so they were worried about, you know, with the cracking too. That makes me so sad. This was such a fun little detail.
I just think about probably how this was, okay, magic spoiler, I suppose. You know, they had to create these divots, right? And then they probably mixed together whatever this concoction
poured it in.
Well, when you've got thousands of people walking around all day in like hot California sun, you know, stuff like this is going to happen. So I'm hoping that they'll figure something out to kind of fix it. Perhaps they do something like that, and then they put like a coating like over all of it, so it doesn't.
Yeah, so maybe
or
they'll
something.
Just paint the goo on and then like seal coat it in or something.
Something
so
maybe.
It's not actually like a separate piece.
Yeah, I don't know what the right solution is, because I'm not like a engineer of this stuff, but it is sad when you have these cool thematic elements that like the universe is like, nope, can't have that. We're gonna put sun and people and.
It just wasn't meant to be on this planet, Tag. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's incompatible with Earth's atmosphere and the Terrans. Well, the vote on the cast member union agreement did not go as smooth as it should have. Some voting irregularities came up, such as cast members getting the wrong park ballot, observers being kicked out before the counting was complete, and rejected ballots. We're waiting for what the next step will be, which I guess is a vote on if they're going to strike or not. And we'll pass the information along to you guys once we know something more. So, dang.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly how this all works. MiceJet did have a really nice article that they wrote up about this. But part of the issue, too, was also that I believe Disneyland did not pass, but DCA did pass. So that's the other kind of weird thing as well. But it sounds like the next step, since it didn't pass for both parks, is that they kind of go back to the drawing boards. They talk to the people in the union that make up the union and say, hey, cast members, what things do you want instead? Why didn't you pass this? And then they bring those new ideas or those new thoughts to Disney and kind of start back the conversations again and hopefully, you know, come to some sort of resolution so that they can then start again and vote and see if it goes through or not. So hopefully the cast members, the unions, and Disneyland will all find some common ground and do something that's fair for the cast members, also fair for Disney, you know, something that works for all parties. Hopefully they can figure that out very soon.
I hope so, too. I mean, it just feels like, you know, there's a lot going on with cast members right now. Yeah. You know, there's a, there and everywhere employees. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a shortage. Of course, we've got it's very busy at the parks and everything like that. People have kind of been rude in some cases. So the fact that they're dealing with all of that and trying to deal with voting on things to get paid more and different benefits and stuff. I just hope that they both that everybody that's involved with this just keeps at it and doesn't give up, because I think it is worth working on and getting something that everybody can be happy with.
Mm-hmm. I hope for the best for the cast members, for sure.
Psst, avast there. It'd be too late to alter course, mateys. And there be trivia questions lurking in every cove, waiting to be answered. Listen close and keep your ruddy Disney knowledge handy. That be the best way to answer correctly. And mark well me words, mateys. Dead men tell no tales. You come seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place. But keep a weather eye open, mates. And hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Hey, it's Trivia Land. Welcome. We got four questions for you. Get excited. Our first question comes from listener Joy B. At the end of the Monsters, Inc. ride, the CDA guys, the ones in the yellow suits, in case you don't know, say, "We have a blank." What number do they give as the code for the problem they're dealing with?
2319. Let him finish the question.
Yeah, seriously.
I wanted to beat you to it.
I was writing it down, so he had to beat me.
You two are feeling competitive.
Apparently.
Like it. I don't know.
Let's see if you can rush through on this next one from listener Lee S. Lincoln gave a different speech in his Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln attraction between 2001 and 2004. Can you explain to me how it was different?
From what years?
2001 to 2004.
Wow, only 3 years.
They had, I don't know what the speech was?
Yeah, can you explain to me how it was different than usual?
Okay, well, I don't know what the speech was, but I remember that you used to have to wear headphones, and they had this weird segment where they were like, you were sitting in a barber's chair, and it felt like somebody was cutting your hair because of the way their sound was working. I definitely remember that because I thought it was strange. But yeah, during when he was talking, it was this whole kind of thing. So I'm going to go with that they had like a 3D immersive sound thing going on.
Interesting. I was going to say that it had something to do with, you know, in the wake of 9/11. So they were, so his speech was a little bit different to kind of commemorate and have that, you know, something to do with like a memorial or kind of like an in honor of. Section. I'm mm-hmm. going to say it had something to do with September 11th.
Huh.
Third question from listener Stephen S. This sports star opened an attraction in Tomorrowland in 1998, calling it pure excitement. Name the sports star and the attraction.
1998. It was probably
sports star.
And what did he say it was called?
It was pure excitement.
I'm going to say it was the Rocket Rods.
That would make sense, yeah, Rocket Rods.
I mean, a lot of stuff reopened during that time, but I'll say Rocket Rods, and I'll say, and it was a sports star?
Sports star.
I don't know, Michael Jordan. James is smiling over there.
It's such the typical, like, I don't know who it is, so I'm going to go with one of the arguably most famous sports stars that has ever existed, Michael Jordan.
Yep.
I'm going to say Rocket Rods as well. But I would think it'd be, like, probably maybe a California person. I don't know. Like, someone that was on, like, a Laker or something like that.
In the late 90s, even. So not only are you having to come up with a sports person, but...
I don't know why I backed myself in that corner, because I don't. The only person I know would be Kobe Bryant, and I don't think he would have.
Should I put you down for Magic Johnson?
Sure.
Magic Johnson. Just
but
making up stuff.
I don't think...
Well, Magic Johnson's good because magic.
There you go.
Yeah, why haven't they done that crossover yet? Our last question comes from me because it's cast member costume time. But it's not just me. I had our Moldovan exchange student pick the locale. So you can't blame me other than my poor fashion description.
Oh, boy.
These cast members are rocking a clean white button-up shirt and a white hat that kind of reminds me of what you'd see if someone who works at a deli counter. And in my infinite jealousy, they're wearing shorts, and they look like professional shorts that you could get away with for business attire. But the really iconic piece that's going to set this apart is the bright yellow apron adorned with some nice all-caps letters and a scenic city design in between those letters.
Holy buckets.
I could see this in my head, but I can't remember
Casey's
where it was.
Casey's Corner.
That's a Disney World.
What? Okay. What's the one? Coke Corner.
What color are the shorts?
I'm going to say Coke Corner.
They're like a black. I think they're black. Maybe navy blue. They're definitely very dark and professional.
White shirt. Crisp. White shirt.
Crisp. Clean.
Clean. What type of hat?
It's something I imagine like a deli worker would wear, or like even a butcher maybe. Kind of got that white paper hat going.
Okay. Color? White?
White.
With a yellow apron?
Yellow apron.
Flows? V8 Cafe in Cars Land?
Oh. That's a good guess, too.
But I feel like that's not right. But that's what I'm going to go with.
I feel like Flo's is a good guess.
Are you with TNT? Do you feel like you've seen that one before? How'd you do on the other questions? Well, if you're not sure, we'll find out the answers after our discussion topic this week.
You want to know what I've learned for Guess the Cast Member Uniform? Is how much I do not pay that close of attention to what the cast members are wearing.
I think you need to start paying attention.
I'm going
to, them.
To need to, yes.
Yeah, I got tons of these coming. It's great.
Well, you just have to do them more because we've gone through so many. What queue are you in?
Oh, I go every other. I get lost in the park. Or I'm
that's right.
I
have to get lost in the park, too.
I got two things.
For our discussion topic this week, we are finishing our conversation with Bruce Edwards, author and former cast member at the Disneyland Magic Shop. So, enjoy.
So, another question for you, just for your cast member days. What kind of... You were there from, what was it, 77 to 81. So
yes.
What kind of, were you in the Magic Shop primarily that whole time?
No,
were there
actually,
any other jobs?
Yeah, I started out like most people do. The Main Street was broken up into a couple of different divisions. Ours was called Main Street North for why I don't know. Because the other side of the street was Main Street West, which was mainly the Emporium. We were north, so anyway. So within that section, you had the tobacco shop, the Candy Palace, Market House, Rings and Things, which may still have been called the China Closet back then. And so I worked all of these locations, plus pulled stock for the other locations. One of the things you do early on is you go to all the stock rooms and you fill the shelves in the shop. So you get more familiar with what's available and what they're stocking and the whole procedure. So I did that at first. I didn't really know what the Magic Shop was about. I wasn't really a fan of magic, but right next door to the Magic Shop was the tobacco shop. And there was a doorway. The wall was cut open and you could walk right next door into the Magic Shop. And I would work the tobacco shop. And when things were slow, I'd stand in the doorway and watch these magicians. I go, hey, this is kind of cool. You know, I'm really not big on selling cigarettes, but this I could get in. And then I realized, I need to talk to my supervisor. How can I get into there? And I went up and talked to him and made the argument that I had been a musician. I had performed for crowds large and small. I knew something about entertaining. And even though I didn't know anything about magic, I think I would really fit in there. And so they said, yeah. We'll put you in there, a trial. And I got into it pretty quickly, and I picked on this stuff pretty quick. I mean, all the other guys looked at me like, oh, who is this guy? Because I already had their little group and they were all friends and did funny things. And that's how that started. But yeah, I worked all the different areas until I discovered the Magic Shop. And that's where I wanted to stay. And I did well there, so they just kept me there. So that was kind of like my permanent location for the remainder of my time there.
That's awesome. So I don't want you to give away too much from the book, but
I already have. It's
described. You describe some behind the counter shenanigans that the public never saw and hilarious anecdotes. Do you have some a shenanigan or an anecdote that you would like to kind of share that would maybe give the overall feel of the type of stuff people are going to hear about in the or read about in the book?
Yeah, well, here's one thing, and it's appropriate to acknowledge that a lot of the stories in there happened before I started working there.
Oh.
A lot of the stuff I was there for and I witnessed, and again, this is a memoir, so mm-hmm. it's all told from my point of view. These guys already had a pattern of shenanigans and goofiness that you learn about once you start working there, because I wasn't aware of this. But one of their favorite things was to play a prank on a new hire. And I will tell you, I'll reveal one that's in the book. And this happened to Chuck Lucas. And he had been just hired and came to work on his first day in the magic shop. Well, the scheduling was made through what they call digital time. Which is, it isn't like 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock. They would have like 9:50, which means 10:30. But it says 10:50, which is at the half hour. So he read that thinking, oh, I need to come to work at 10:50. It's actually 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
So he shows up 20 minutes late. And Ken Neufeld is standing by the counter. He's the guy that's running the place. And he walks in and says, oh, we didn't realize he was late. And he's all apologetic. And Ken kind of looks at him. Yeah, okay. You know, the new guy, right? And so Chuck didn't exactly get a warm welcome from that. And so he didn't know what to expect. So Ken leaves the shop and says, you know, I got to go out for a minute. So I'll be back in a little bit. And in the meantime, the phone rings and Chuck picks it up. And it's his supervisor wanting to know why he's late for work. And he doesn't know what to make of it. And he says, look, to prove to me that you're actually there, I want you to go out onto the sidewalk, stand next to the cigar store Indian and wave to the second story building across the street where my office is. I'll look out the window and make sure you're there. So he goes out there, stands by the cigar store Indian in front of the tobacco shop, waves his arms. And he's waiting for some recognition. Well, the drapes don't move. Nothing happens. Everything, you know. And for those of us that are familiar with this, there is no second floor. It's just a facade. There's nothing there. There are no offices. There are no supervisors there. And what had happened is that Ken had called him on the phone from the tobacco shop, posing as the supervisor, telling him what to do. So while Chuck is out there for like 15 minutes waiting, waving like this, and suddenly he hears laughter coming out of the magic shop and he goes in and realizes, you know, he's been had. And so that was his introduction. And I think that's one of the best stories in the book. And now I didn't have anything like that happen to me. I don't know. I think it's because I was bigger than everybody. They didn't dare. But that kind of thing went on all the time. People were playing jokes on people. And it was very innocent fun. But that was kind of the standard, you know, that type of how you treated people. And it was all in fun. And, you know, nobody likes to be made foolish. But, you know, now Chuck had, you know, been through his orientation. He knew what to expect now. And then he goes on to do his own pranks on other people.
Oh,
and it just kind of built from there. And again, these are things that happened prior to me working there. So I had to contact all these guys and get the story straight. And I heard all of these through our little get-togethers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everyone's story was a little bit different from the other guys. You know, everyone kind of likes to tell it their own way.
Yep.
So we got everybody together and I was in communication with everyone. And so everyone, and they're all acknowledged in the book to certify that all of these stories are accurate.
That's so fun. So, of course, there was all sorts of fun and magic and pranks going on inside of the shop. Did you guys ever kind of play pranks or do anything with any of your other cast members that were outside of the magic shop?
Yeah. For the most part, you had to be in the shop to be the mm-hmm. victim of a mm-hmm. prank. I mean, we didn't go out of our way down to the Candy Palace to make someone look foolish. you had to come to us. So I don't think there was a lot of that going on. Not that I recall. There may be some of that went on, but for the most part, it was just the magic shop. Continue. And again, that was expected. People would come in there not to see magic because they knew it as a joke shop. They wanted to see pranks. Now, I will mention one other one, and I don't think this is a big secret. But if you don't know about the spiders, does the spiders in the magic shop mean anything to you?
It doesn't.
Isn't that funny? I mean, this was like a staple probably from the early 50s. I don't know how far back this goes. But there's an old, old prank that is probably centuries old where you get a little, and we had like these little plastic spiders that we sold. Well, you tie it to the end of a string and you hang it from the ceiling. And the string goes through these little screw eyes back behind the counter, down behind the counter. And you've got the other end of the string. So when you manipulate the string, you can lower the spider on top of people. See, they walk in. It's up on the ceiling. They don't know it's there. If they're standing under it, man, and you're near the string, you're going to get it. I mean, that's just, and after a while, that was like one of the things that everyone looked forward to. We'd have people come in the shop, and the first thing they do is look around to see if the spiders were there. So that was something that I think's kind of been forgotten about over the years. That was one of our one of the best pranks. And again, we didn't sell that prank. That was something we did. I mean, typically, if you're going to demonstrate a prank or a trick, you want to sell it to them. We didn't go there. We would do tricks with a regular deck that people already had at home. Things with objects that we do a vanish or something where you couldn't buy it. I'm just showing you a trick. I'm entertaining you, and that was the real differentiation is that. We had people who demonstrated tricks that to sell them and people that just entertained really good magic. And whether they bought a trick or not didn't matter.
You know what's funny? You're telling these stories of doing pranks and stuff. And I feel like cast members of up until, I don't know, mid-90s, maybe even early 2000s, have stories like these. Like it was a fun place to work at the parks and you could get away with... you know, having a good time while you're at work. And I feel like I've heard from people who have been cast members before and have been cast members more recently, and they've definitely, it seems like, cracked down on a lot of that stuff, which is unfortunate because we hear all these stories, and I feel like through interviews we've done for the show before, people have said, oh yeah, you couldn't get away with that today or whatever. And so yeah. I hear these stories and they sound like so much fun. It sounds like a great place to work and everything. And I just am kind of sad that, you know, nowadays you can't get away with some of that.
There is some truth to that. And I will tell you that while we're talking about spiders is that not everyone enjoyed having a spider drop on their head. Needless to say.
Yeah.
And every now and then they'd go over to City Hall and file a complaint. You know, look what these guys did to me. And the next morning, the supervisors would come in with their scissors and snip, snip, there goes the spiders. Okay. And so we kind of lay low for about a week or so, and then we put them back up. And I can't help but feeling that the supervisors kind of enjoyed, they kind of envied that we were able to do this stuff. You know, you'd see them walk out of the shop with their spiders in their hands and kind of laughing, you know, they're like, boy, I wish I could do that.
I just imagine working at guest services and you're sitting over there and somebody comes in and complains, oh, the joke shop, magic shop guys are at it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we did kind of have that reputation, at least for the people that were aware of it. Now, we did get a lot of people in there that were professional magicians. We had people that were Magic Castle members that we knew that would be at the park. They'd come in and we'd talk magic. If we knew a new trick, they'd show it to us, that type of thing.
Very neat.
There was a magic shop over at Knott's Berry Farm at the time.
Oh.
And they would come over and, hey, mm-hmm. come on over. So it was kind of a tight community of magicians, not just of Disneyland people. But, I think that over time, yeah, and when you say they've kind of cracked down on some of that, I don't know if it's because people were complaining too much or, you know, it was just... they didn't want to have that reputation. I'm not really sure why that is. All I can tell you is that when I was there and we would do these, we get into the shenanigans you talk about, everyone loved it. You know, we do this stuff and most people just laughed. And you'd walk by the magic shop and you hear a scream or something. Well, we just dropped a spider on someone. And most of the time they just laugh it off, you know.
Yeah,
other times, yeah, not so much. But
there's
again,
always the stick in the muds.
We were the joke shop. And if you walked in there and you didn't know that, you were in for a rude awakening.
I could see it. We're going to have to check out the magic shop.
I need to spend some time in there. I want to get a demo.
Because I feel like if anyone is still allowed to get away with shenanigans at the resort, it would 100% be the magic shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the stuff in the book, and again, I don't want to reveal too much about the shenanigans or the jokes we played on people or the jokes we played on each other, which was hilarious. That was more fun. But there are a couple of things that I can tell you that aren't in the book.
Sure.
Stuff that didn't make the cut because that was too distasteful. Now, there's a couple of things in there. Not everyone wanted to be in there. And I kind of had to make that judgment, what's appropriate and what isn't.
Sure.
But I am I'm developing our website, which is BruceEdwardsBooks.com/magic, where we're going to have a lot of the stuff that's not in the book.
Oh, cool.
A lot of the photos. Before I continue, during my research, I go online and I go, let's find some old pictures of the magic shop. Well, there aren't any.
Oh.
If you type in Main Street Magic Shop, you get lots of Houdini magic.
Fine.
But, again, man, people didn't have cell phones. You know, they had Instamatic cameras and things like that. So there weren't any pictures. So I put the word out and I said, man, we got to get some pictures for this book.
Yeah.
And suddenly all these people with their private collections they've been storing in shoeboxes all these years came in. So we're going to be putting some of that on the website for people to see of the stories that didn't make it the book. But a kind of section of you test your knowledge, a Q&A, see how much you know about the magic shop and its history. But there were some things like the funny questions that people would ask us and how we would respond. Now, I'll tell you, these are ones that are kind of borderline. I could have put them in the book, but I don't know if anyone would object them to or not. But one of the items we sold in the shop were crystal balls.
Oh.
Okay, now you know where I'm going right off. Someone would come in and would say, do you have crystal balls? And I'd say, no, but I have a wooden leg. And that evolved into no, but I have a glass jaw.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's not really over the top, I don't think. But
that's not too bad.
It didn't make into the book, but you can read about it on the website.
There's
a lot of these little things that went on behind the scenes that I wouldn't say they're inappropriate, but it's hard to know who your audience is.
Yeah.
You don't want to offend people.
Yep.
That kind of gives you another idea of the flavor of the place. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything. And then someone would do something funny, and then this other guy would pick up on it. And it just evolved to the point where when you went into the magic shop, that was what you got, and that's what people expected. So if you went in there and there were no shenanigans, you'd be disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what made you leave?
Well, I'll tell you, I was there for 4 years, which is, depending on your point of view, a short period of time, or maybe I stayed there too long. But there are still people working there on Main Street it's been 40 years and they're still on Main Street.
Wow.
Not many of them, but some of them are there. They decided to make Disneyland their career.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I don't know that Disney necessarily wanted you to make a career out of it. A lot of them were students that were going to Cal State Fullerton University, taking classes, and would work magic shop part time, which was great for them because Disneyland would schedule your shifts around your school schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked great. And for the most part, you went to school, you graduated, and you moved on. It was kind of like having a summer job, that type of a thing. And for me, it was kind of the same type of a thing. It's like, you know, I've got other things that I want to do. I don't know that I want to be tied down. And the timing was such that, you know, this is a good time to move away. And plus, there were a lot of people that were kind of leaving at that time.
Oh, sure.
And as I said, the park was kind of going through a transition. Most of the old time Disney management was leaving the company. And we get these memos, you know, this guy's no longer president of the Walt Disney Company or this and there. And so all these changes were going on. And it was kind of, I wouldn't say it was just the pixie dust wearing off. It was just not quite as much fun as we were having, you know,
sure,
years prior. So that led to it. But the ironic thing is that after I left Disneyland is when things started to happen for me. And the biggest one was, you know, I always wanted to be an animator from when I was a little child. I wanted to get into animation. I watched all the Disney animated films. I studied the books. I drew. When I was little, I made up, you know, little flip books. You know, you can watch things come to life in that way. And during that period, I was kind of experimenting with computer animation, which was new at the time.
Oh, mm-hmm.
This is before we knew about things like Toy Story had not come out yet. And so I was kind of self-taught. I got some software that was, you know, the high-end software I couldn't afford to buy. But there was some stuff that they use for CAD drawings, you know, for architectural things that had enough tools in there. Well, yeah, you could keyframe things and create some animation. It was kind of crude, but it did work. And so I played with that. And after Toy Story came out, and then all of a sudden there was a rush. Everybody wanted to do computer animation. Yeah. Well, there aren't that many people that could do it. And there weren't many colleges that were teaching it. But I knew how to do it just because I was self-taught. And so I thought, well, okay, there's the word has gone out. We need computer animators. So I looked into it. And as fate would have it, I happened to be at the right place at the right time. I originally got hired by Fox Animation Studios as a computer animator. I wasn't doing character animation. I was there for a year, and then I got a call from Warner Brothers Feature Animation, which was actually a new division at the time. Hmm. They were looking for people. I'd already had a year's experience working on feature films with Fox, and they said, okay, yeah, we need animators. I sent them my demo reel, and boom, here I was making my living as an animator. I worked on, I don't know if you know the movie, The Iron Giant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most people, you know, let's see that reaction. It didn't get promoted. A lot of people didn't see it, but to this day, I'll wear my Iron Giant crew jacket, which I don't wear to advertise the Iron Giant. I wear it because it's a warm jacket. And people will see that and they'll want to shake my hand. Oh my God, that's my favorite movie. Or I grew up with that movie, that type of thing. And so that was like, you know, we didn't know it was going to be so big at the time. Again, it was like after I left Disneyland, I don't know if it's because I worked at Disneyland, but things all of a sudden started to fall into place.
It was all that extra pixie dust just following you around.
Should I say that my dreams came true? Do I dare?
A wish is the dream
your heart makes? Yeah. Something about it.
I mean, that's awesome, though. Like, I mean, we hear this from people that have worked at Disney, too. It's like, first of all, I think more in the past, more than I would say now, maybe. But I feel like working for Disneyland, like there was a level of customer service and, you know, work ethic and stuff that you got from that, that I think people really, they'd see it on your resume or application or something. They'd be like, oh, well, this is going to be somebody who's going to do really good because, you know, their standards are pretty high over there.
Yeah. 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 Again, I don't really know the way things are today. Something has changed that's all I can tell you. It's not. And I think that's what people will, one of the takeaways from the book will be what it was like back then, you know. And I think 1977 was when I first started working there. And to me, that sounds like, you know, that was just yesterday. Mm-hmm. Other people think, oh, that's ancient history. You know, would you come to work on a dinosaur? You know, that's how long ago that was, you know. And it wasn't really that long, although that was 40 years ago. But exactly. That's what you're saying. You're making your point is that it was a different environment back then than it is today. Not to say that what it's like today is not as good. I mean, a lot of people go there. You know, you got nothing against that kind of success. I mean, people love it. But there was, you know, when I was there, the park was closed on Mondays and Tuesdays because they couldn't get enough people to fill the park. And if you go in on a Wednesday, you practically have the whole park to yourself. I mean, that just doesn't happen anymore. Yeah. So it was a different experience, to be sure.
I was looking today. I was in my office, and on my wall, I have some guidebooks that not guidebooks, but like the park maps when you'd go. And I have one from 1996 when the Indiana Jones adventure opened. I have one from some other time, but I have a little. It looks like it was printed on like paper, like regular like printer paper, but it was like the park hours for that day, like how much parking and stuff was, and how much the tickets were, and like and there was only the one park at the time. I think this was, or no, this there was two parks. It was 2002, so they had a 1 day ticket or whatever was like $42, and I was like, that's gone up quite a bit since 2002. Crazy.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Well, but people still go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's another example of what you're talking about. And again, this is stuff that I either wasn't aware of or just took for granted. But there was one website that had a bunch of stuff about the grad nights, which I guess they still do grad nights.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And back then, you go to your grad night, and they had all of these top entertainers.
Yeah.
Working there. You know, one was playing on Tom Sawyer's Island. They put a stage up there. There was one in Tomorrowland. And these were guys that all had like big top 40 hits. Mm-hmm. And so there was all this entertainment, and the high schoolers would come in there, and they had the whole place to themselves. And I thought, well, now they don't quite do that anymore. Now, me personally, I mean, being a musician, I grew up listening to jazz. And a guy that used to play there regularly was Buddy Rich, the drummer. Mm. And I'd be working there, and I'd say, can I take my lunch early? I want to go here, buddy. And so the entertainment thing has kind of spiraled downward over the years, which is unfortunate. But yeah, if you went to a grad night, boy, they pulled out all the stops for you. And I wasn't aware of that. And again, we just kind of took it for granted that that was how you did it. And I think that's one of the things that that you won't see if you go on a grad night. It's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I haven't been for a few years.
I certainly haven't
been to a grad night in a long time.
I think maybe they get DJs. That's about as exciting as it gets now for grad nights. They definitely aren't bringing in live entertainers like they used to. Yeah. So, you know, I like completely had space until you just said this. But yeah, you're right. You're at the parks at a completely different time. They weren't open 7 days a week. And I think because of that, there seemed to be a lot more cool, fun perks for cast members, because there were days that the park wasn't open to the public. And so they would kind of do more kind of special events specific to cast members. Were some of those, did you attend any of those special events? Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, on the days off, one of the greatest things they did is that, and I don't remember what time, there was always a certain time of the year, but it was on the days that they were closed, they would have a family film festival in the Lincoln Theater.
Oh.
Now, if you sat in the seat, they had a screen that would lower down in front of Mr. Lincoln. They would project, you know, 35 millimeter prints of like Lady and the Tramp and Dumbo, all the classics that you couldn't see in the theaters. And, we always went to that. And they would usually have a guest speaker. One of the animators that worked on it would be there.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This was extraordinary. Yeah. If they're not doing that anymore, they should, although, you know, but that was something that was unique to, if you were a cast member, you got to participate in those type of activities.
Wow.
And they had like the canoe races. I think they still do that.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, that goes way back. That was always fun.
Yeah, because they used to have Christmas parties, and they'd have bring your family to parties and stuff and all that type of stuff. And I feel like they've kind of pared a lot of that back. But I feel like that almost goes hand in hand with what you were saying about, you know, the A and B list, you know, performers that would be in the parks for different things. I feel like, you know, you look back, you know, you watch, they have some stuff on Disney Plus, and they released a couple on DVD a few years ago, too, of, you know, anniversaries and stuff in the park, and they would show clips from like when people were there, you know, obviously you had stuff that were Disney performers, right? So you had like the Mouseketeers would come and like Annette would perform and stuff. There was, who was the jazz guy was in one of the things he was playing on the Mark Twain.
Jazz, they'd have people like Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong, that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
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 And like, it's just like, you don't get that anymore. You know, it's not like you go to Disneyland and, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Whoever's the big thing.
these were the days of Walt Disney. You know, these were things he was fans of these guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the way he wanted to entertain his guests was, to bring in the top notch talent. And, you know, and unfortunately after Walt died, that was kind of the point where we saw this shift. And if you read historically at the studio and with the filmmaking and the animators, Walt was the guiding light through all of those mm-hmm. projects. And I thought, Walt's not here. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And we've got to somehow, you know, take over where he left off. And so that was kind of a struggle for a lot of the departments at the company. It wasn't just at Disneyland.
I feel like we're kind of going through that right now a little bit with Bob Chapek taking over, is that, you know, he's kind of like a, in my mind anyway, he's kind of like a financial guy, right? So he's not somebody who's like sitting there spitting out ideas for things or whatever, or like Michael Eisner was. Eisner was like a second coming of Walt Disney almost, at least in the beginning.
Well, not at the time.
Until Frank Wells passed, and then like that became like
that
a whole
was a shame.
And then that's kind of where his tenure kind of started to go. And then, you know, Bob Iger wasn't a big creative necessarily person in my mind, you know,
in the beginning.
Yeah. And then, I just kind of want somebody who is like Walt, or who is like, was like Eisner there for a while, who will be the face of the company, that wants to be that like father figure to young kids through the television or whatever. That's mm-hmm. like, we're going to take, you know, today we're going to take you, you know, to, you know, let's make it modern, to Arendelle. And we're going to see hear a story about two sisters, you know, and, you know, of course, introducing Frozen. But you're just kind of missing that personal connection. And I think a lot of people, you know, just look at, you know, the Disney's become so corporate and everything. Yeah. And I know we've gone way off topic, but I'm just saying, like, I hope that in the future we get another leader of the company like that.
Yeah.
I think that's
Needed. You know, it's funny now that you bring up Michael Eisner, is that, there was some criticism there that he was kind of going into that direction, and that he wasn't doing everything that maybe the way Walt would have done.
Yeah.
But by the same token, we look back on it, and he did bring about that kind of revival of animation mm-hmm. to the old style.
Oh yeah.
The three musicals that he did back then, those are like classics now.
Oh yeah.
He was responsible for that. Some of the buildings, you know, they built those cast member buildings and administration buildings in Florida and other places. He brought in Frank Gehry to design them. You know, who would go to that extra expense? But he wanted to make things as good as they could. He really was looking for that quality that should be there and was. So we kind of, but I'll tell you one other funny story. This has nothing to do with the magic shop, right?
Like, sure.
Not, in fact, I don't think I've even told this to anybody, but I'll tell you. Right after Michael Eisner left the company, my wife and I were having lunch at the, I don't know what it's called today, but it's a restaurant with a kind of a pier that goes out over the water. It's outdoors and you can eat outside there. And we were having lunch there, and the characters were out and about, and Goofy comes over to our table, mm-hmm. you know, and and I say, "Hey, Goofy, what do you think about Michael Eisner leaving the company?" And he wipes his brow like, and then he quick puts his finger to his lips like, "Shh, don't tell anybody I said that." So that was Goofy.
That was so unfortunate. I feel like you get that thing, though. I mean, if you go back, it's unfortunate because he did really good and did a lot of, you know, the expansion at Disney World was massive. You know, he built, you know, Disneyland Paris, like he expanded internationally, all this stuff. So he did a lot of really great things. He saved the company from being sold off to who knows who, right? Wow. But, you know, after Frank Wells's accident, I think he kind of lost his way, because it was much like Walt and Roy that they balanced each other. One was the financial, one was the creative.
But when you
have somebody that has to then do both, I think he kind of, you know, he had to start worrying about the financial stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think he got worried about it and didn't know how to handle it as well. And anyway, but it seems that the Disney company works well when you have a financial person who takes care of that in behind the scenes, and then you have the creative person who's kind of the public face that's doing this stuff.
Walt and Roy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly.
Where's Walt and Roy when you need them? But it's interesting how, you know, you're talking about the history of Disneyland and the people that have come and gone over the years. And I think one of the interesting perspectives in the book is that I take it from the early 50s before Disneyland. You know, what was going on there? I don't just talk about Disney. What was going on at the time?
Yeah.
You know, we had, this was the 50s. There was, you know, the Sputnik was flying overhead. We had the space race was on. And so I offer my, you know, what my role was in that. I was just a kid. And suddenly Disneyland comes along. It's like, okay, all our problems are solved, right? We'll go to Disneyland and they'll take care of everything. So you see this transition. So I'm able to take you from pre-Disneyland to going to Disneyland as an adolescent and into adulthood, to working at Disneyland, to leaving Disneyland, and then all the things that happened afterwards, you know, which was some of the best opportunities came to me because I worked at Disneyland. I don't know. Who knows? That's just the way it happened.
So before we wrap up, I've got just kind of a basic question for you. Did you have any favorite?
I have a basic answer.
Yeah, perfect. Did you have any favorite tricks or jokes that you liked to perform while at the shop?
Oh, geez. Well, you know, my favorite joke, and again, it's one of these like really simple jokes. It's not complicated at all. But we had these mustard and ketchup squeeze bottles. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of restaurants don't have those on the tables anymore. If you go to some of the kind of retro diner places, they always mm-hmm. have them. And you squeeze it and the mustard and the ketchup comes out. Well, this one didn't, it was empty, but it had like, for the mustard, it had a little yellow string inside. And you'd squeeze it and this string would come out. And it looks like a stream of mustard, you know, because you've got like half a second to respond. Yeah. You're squeezing it on somebody. And it was one of these things that was just so simple and probably the most effective thing. And nobody got squirted on. Nobody got offended. If you had a squirting gag, you'd squirted water on them, you know, and people don't want to get wet. We sold things like the invisible ink. You squirt it on someone and you get ink all over them. Oh, my God. And then it disappears. Well, one time someone tried that and it didn't disappear.
Oh, no.
And so we stopped stocking that one real quick. but I would say my favorite prank was... If you don't include the spiders, was this ketchup squeeze bottle. I love that one.
I can see that.
Simple yet effective.
It reminds me of those, you know, you see them all the time. You know, you open them up and like the snake thing comes out and freaks people out.
We had, one of the things that we did because we sold them and we had a full stock of them in the back of the counter is that we typically you could fit two snakes in this can. So we thought, well, how many snakes can you fit in these things? We got a bunch of them sitting here. So we just packed them in there and we found you could fit like six snakes in one can. And the thing weighed like 10 pounds, you know, because full of these metal springs. And someone would open it up and these springs would come out for like, you know, 15 seconds. They just keep coming and coming. So, the snake cans, that's a classic prank. That one always works. Although it's hard to find someone that isn't wise to it already.
Right.
Been around so long. Again, I would say this book is unique in the fact that it's told from a point of view. Mm-hmm. It isn't just a collection of funny stories. There's much more to it than just the shenanigans you talked about. But the history, there's a lot of history in there probably that people didn't know. But I think the thing people will like best is these stories that if someone hadn't written them down, would never be told.
Yes.
You know, and because I was already an author, that was, you know, kind of on my shoulders to take care of. But everybody involved, the people that I've mentioned, Jim Turner was another guy who we talk about who met his wife there. Oh. And I'm sure this happens today. The relationships that blossom at Disneyland between cast members, I think probably most of the people I've mentioned that I work with all met their spouses there.
Oh, wow.
It's all that pixie dust.
Including me. Actually, the girl I married was actually my boss at the time.
Oh.
and then I married her, and she's still the boss.
I was going to say.
Yeah, okay. That's an old one.
there's
a lot of stuff in there. And like you say, it's not just a history lesson. I tried to make it more storytelling than just fact-based. So, I think that's what people will get out of it is that it's an enjoyable story. It has the Peter Pan and fantasy connection. And if you're a Disneyland fan, I think you'll like it.
So again, I don't know if we've mentioned, but the title of the book is Nothing Up My Sleeve But Pixie Dust. We will definitely have a link in the show notes for those of you that are interested.
Okay, isn't that funny? We talked for an hour and a half and didn't once say the title.
We'll get it in there. Don't worry.
All right. The full title is, if you don't mind me saying so. Actually, here, I have the book in front of me. Nothing Up My Sleeve But Pixie Dust, How Working at Disneyland's Main Street Magic Shop Changed Everything.
Perfect. And it sounds like it did change everything through the stories you've told us. Did.
You know,
and even before I started doing my research, I thought, oh, this is going to be kind of bland. And I go, man, no, all this stuff happened that I didn't realize until I started looking into it and talking.
That's really neat.
And interviewing people and getting some of this information and some of the historical facts.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Well, thank you for taking the time to put this book together. I think
thank you for inviting me. This has been great.
But I think it's really important because, like you said, there's all these wonderful stories, and even just with photos of the magic shop from when you were there, how they just, you know, they're not out there. And so if we don't kind of capture them for people to like learn and hear and enjoy for years to come, they just kind of disappear. So I think it's really, really important. So thank you for taking the time to research and do all this.
Unlike people like you who walk right past the magic shop.
Exactly.
We'll stop and have a look now.
Exactly.
We'll definitely be stopping the next time we're in the parks for sure.
Excellent. You'll be glad you did.
Yes. All right. Well, our final question is, now you've worked at Disneyland before. So if you could work again at Disneyland, what would you do? Sky's the limit. It could be any job. It could be real. It could be a job you make up. What's kind of the, if you could go back and work there again, what would you do?
You know, as much as I liked working on the street and interacting with the guests, which is so much fun because you meet so many people from all over the world. I love doing that. But I think I would kind of like to do a behind the scenes thing with the animatronics.
I was
a fan of animatronics early on. In fact, I designed and built a couple of my own several years ago. There were 2 4-foot tall mice and they would sing Christmas carols and I'd rent them out for Christmas parties.
That's awesome.
It was another one of these self-taught things. They were pneumatically powered. I had to come up with a way to trigger the movements and sync with music and stuff like that, and did that on my own. And so that's always been one of the things. I mentioned at the outset of Mr. Lincoln and I getting together, so you can read about that. It has to do with animatronics. Another secret that you learn.
I'm excited to get to that part of the book. I really am.
Well, now I definitely did you order an ebook? Format?
I did. Yep.
Oh, yeah. So I got to do that too.
Ebooks and the print books are available online and anywhere finer books are sold, as they say.
Awesome. If people want to learn more about you and maybe read your other books, where can people go to find out more about you?
My website is the best place. It's BruceEdwardsBooks.com. I have all my other books, my fiction, actually young adult fiction was what I was writing prior to this. Those are all there. The videos, the trailers are, get a kick out of those. Those are, you can either go to YouTube, it's also Bruce Edwards Books, or they're on the website as well. But go there. All the links are there if you want to purchase a copy. You know, it's all in one place.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you for spending time with us this evening. And I'm sure our listeners are going to love hearing about your stories. And hopefully they'll go out and pick up a copy of your book and learn the rest of the story.
Yeah. Hey, this has been a real treat for me. I appreciate it, you guys.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DL Weekly.
Did Tag and Teresa pull any rabbits out of their hats with these trivia answers? Nope. All right, back to Trivia Land. It's me, Producer James. We got some answers for our questions that Tag and Teresa had some troubles with. Our first one came from listener Joy B. At the end of Monsters, Inc. ride, the CDA guys, those in the yellow suits, say we have a blank. What number do they give as code for the problem they're dealing with? You two got that one right. It is indeed a 2319.
Good job, Teresa.
And if you're wondering,
I went to high five you and you high fived yourself.
And if you're wondering why it's 2319, 23 represents the 23rd letter of the alphabet W and 19, the 19th S, short for white sock.
Interesting. Oh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Joy decided to make it a little easy on you and share the nugget later on. So.
Oh, yeah. If we would have had, if that was the question, is what does 2319 represent? Or why is it significant? Whew.
Yeah, pretty neat. So our second question from listener Lee S. Lincoln gave a different speech in the attraction between 2001 and 2004. What was kind of different about it? It was more focused on the Civil War. So there are a lot of bits of the Gettysburg Address mixed in.
Dang it! My gut.
Your gut was good, Teresa,
I was
though.
Say,
that is probably the most believable wrong answer I've heard.
No, I was going to say, before you said the years, I'm like, Gettysburg Address. It's the only thing that comes to mind. And then you said 2001. I'm like, it's got to be something to do with 9/11.
But wasn't that also the time when they had the stupid haircut thing?
You know, it might be. I can't really speak to that from experience.
The question was the speech, though.
It's true.
I'm looking it up real quick.
Oh,
I'm sure.
The entire Gettysburg Address, according to Lee. Yep. Oh, God, now we're down a rabbit hole.
Hold on, I just want to see.
Okay, I'm a terrible person. What speech does he give now? Like, what?
I don't know if it's a formal speech that he gives now. I think it's mixes of some of the letters he wrote and whatever they wrote specifically for the attraction.
Got it. Okay.
So, the Walt Disney Story featuring great moments of Mr. Lincoln, The Journey to Gettysburg was the full name from 2001 to 2004. And they said the main theater was given a refurbishment, both sides featuring portraits of Civil War soldiers. On July 17th, 2001, the attraction reopened, but it was drastically changed to focus on the American Civil War. Although it still retained this name, the Walt Disney Story featuring great moments of Mr. Lincoln. In the pre-show, guests were introduced to American Civil War photographer Matthew Brady, and they assumed the role of a fictitious Union soldier named John Cunningham. They entered the main theater and wore special headphones with binaural sound technology. In the show, Cunningham and Brady in his photo studio received a haircut, went back to battle, was eventually wounded. He then met President Abraham Lincoln and attended the Gettysburg Address in person. The current one, first two sentences from the Gettysburg Address and the song Two Brothers.
Oh, yes. Depressing Two Brothers.
Oh, that is really sad.
Also, the song Golden Dream is played as guest exit of the attraction.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say the Gettysburg Address, but I'm like, maybe that's what he says now. I don't want to be that person.
He does start with it, like Jake said. Four score seven years ago.
Interesting. So it was the full, more of the entire Gettysburg Address is what he did.
It's not that long, so that makes sense that he put that in there.
Interesting. Very cool.
All right, our third question. This sports star opened an attraction in Tomorrowland in 1998, calling it Pure Excitement. Name the sports star and the attraction. I think we found our stumper category sports stars related to Disneyland.
Let's start with the attraction.
It is indeed Rocket Rods.
Yeah.
Congratulations on getting that one correct.
Good job, Dag.
Now, you should have been more in line with the theming of, like, Tomorrowland and other attractions kind of related to Rocket Rods. You should have gone more of the racing angle.
Oh, boy.
Because we're looking for Mario Andretti.
Nope. I would have said, if you would have told me racing, it was a Jeff Gordon. That's all I got.
Oh, yeah.
Bye, Jill.
Yeah, it's saying something, though. Mario Andretti calling that pure excitement when he's used to racing at, like, I don't know, 200, 220 miles per hour. So
yeah, it was probably the fact.
He wasn't paid for that at all.
It was probably the fact that it was on the People Mover tracks that were unbanked, and he probably thought he was going to fling off the side of the attraction.
That is exciting. All right, our final question. Cast member costumes. Our Moldovan exchange student picked this out, and I'm poorly writing this. These cast members are rocking a clean white button-up shirt and a white hat that reminds me of something you'd see at a deli counter employee wearing. In my infinite jealousy, they're wearing shorts that look professional enough for business attire, but the iconic piece of the outfit is a bright yellow apron adorned with some nice all-caps letters and a scenic city design in the middle. Maybe if I would have given you the hint that there is an iconic tower with a big letter A in that scene of the city design.
It's the shawarma cart, people.
It's the shawarma palace.
So wait, when you said that you let our exchange student pick this, did you give him just a list of attractions and he picked?
I gave him the Disneyland app with the map pulled up, and I said, do you want an attraction or a dining place? And he said, food. And then he went right to Avengers Campus.
Of course he did.
And he picked the shawarma cart and thought it was the funniest looking word I think he's seen for a while.
Shawarma?
Shawarma.
Now he's going to have shawarma when he's there this spring.
That's right.
Something to look forward to.
So, tough week for TNT, but they did pretty all right. They're still feeling good, I hope.
Well, we're feeling something.
If you have questions that you want to hear on the podcast and try to stump TNT or see if they can answer it correctly and surprise us, you can send producer Vern and I an email and we'll happily read your questions here. We got a bit of a backlog, so we'll get to it eventually, I promise. You can send us an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Back to school savings are officially in session at Tanger Outlets. Shop the latest school styles with an extra 25% off during Tanger Style, our biggest sale of the season, now through August 25th. Plan your trip at tanger.com.